Hey, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode 506 of the Bold and Brave Her podcast. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Sunita Sah, and she is the author of Defy, the Power of No in a World That Demands Yes. Oh, yes, I am all about Defy. Why are you about Defy, Dr. Sah?
Well, I've been fascinated by what that single powerful word defy means for such a long time. The way that I was brought up, I was known for being an obedient daughter and student. And I remember asking my dad when I was quite young, what does my name Sunita mean? And he said, in Sanskrit, Sunita means good. And mostly I lived up to that. And by good, what the messages that they meant was to be polite, to be nice, to obey, to not question authority, do as you're told. And we often get these messages growing up. We're expected to comply, and we start equating being compliant with being good and defiance with being bad. And then that makes it really difficult for us to defy when we need to, when we get older. I was fascinated by that tension between doing what was expected of me and doing what I thought was right. And that tension really drove and inspired my work and research and led me to study influence, advice, authority, and write the book Defy.
I love it. So you're an award-winning professor at Cornell University, and you're also an expert in organizational psychology. So you've got the street smarts. And to top it off, I ran out of room for all of your degrees. You're a physician. You have an MBA and a PhD, for crying out loud, you know, get to work here. Stop all this education. So, you know, I think that's very cool that you started looking at Defy, because it's always been something I thought about, because it's been kind of an undercurrent in my own life. Now, when I invited you to come on board and be a guest, I sent you a picture. And the picture was of me in a tank top. And this is what it looked like, okay, for everyone out there. And what does it say? It says, Defy.
I love that.
Okay. All right. So why did I have a tank top with Defy? Because that's the way I feel. You know, I was like you, and I'd like to know whether or not boys, there's a gender specificity to this whole thing, because I was a good little girl too, up to a point. And then I discovered Defy. So what's going on with girls and boys?
Well, the messages that we received to be good didn't just come from parents. It came from teachers and the community. And especially girls were expected to comply, to be nice, to be polite, to serve other people. It's also a dynamic, I think, that's familiar to many children of immigrants, that we have this strict upbringing and expectations to be high achieving. So in some of my studies, I do see a difference, a gender difference in terms of some of the social pressure to comply. In others, I don't. And it very much depends on some of the psychological processes that are present, whether or not we've just simply been socialized to comply when we're younger. So I do receive messages from men as well saying they had a similar upbringing, that they were expected to do as they're told, to suppress any emotions. And they really resonated with the concept of defiance. And what I found in my research that substantially changed how I think and made a big difference is that I discovered that we've misunderstood what it means to defy. So we often think about defiance as being this negative thing, and that's how we're brought up to think about it. And even the Oxford English Dictionary, their definition of defiance is to challenge the power of someone else, like to resist boldly and openly. Now, I grew up in England, so I'm not one to disagree with the Oxford English Dictionary all that much, but
it's your peep.
In this case, I do think that definition is too narrow, and it doesn't honor our agency. And so my definition of defiance is that to defy is to act in accordance with your true values when there is pressure to do otherwise. So it actually reframes defiance to a proactive positive force in society. Because if you think about it, all our individual acts of consent and dissent and compliance, they build up the society that we live in. And so it affects our lives, our communities, our workplaces. And that's why I'm so passionate about it.
You know, it's interesting. I'm trying to figure out what I've been doing for a million years here. So I kind of do stealthful defiance. Maybe there's some kind of a academic way of looking at that one too. So I'll give you an example that I've used a couple of other times on my podcast. And that was when I was in medical school, when dinosaurs ruled the earth, when I finally ended up in the operating room. So it was my first day for the OR. I was all excited and everything. I eventually ended up doing internal medicine and critical care. So you can understand that I kind of like that stuff. So I walked over. I'd never been in the OR suite. And they said, okay, go to the locker room, you know, dress up, do your gig. And I said, oh, no problem. And then I looked up and there were two doors. One said doctors, one said nurses. And so I thought, doctors and nurses, but I'm not a nurse. Then I noticed all the women were going into the nurses thing and all the men were going into the doctors thing. Now we had a little dilemma. It's like, wait a minute. So I went into the nurses thing and with my horror and shock, and you probably have seen this too, maybe in your training, I saw that the nurses were dressed in these asinine dresses and the OR is freezing cold. Why would you be wearing, and the dresses weren't like necessarily short, but the, you know, your legs were, come on now, you know, and plus, you know, I'm like, no, that's not comfortable. So then I went outside again, and I watched as the doctors came out and they were wearing scrubs. And they look really comfortable, you know, the pants and the shirt and everything. I thought, So I waited and waited and I just sort of quietly, you know, a little whistling. And then I waited for one of my medical school buddies to show up, a guy. And I said, go in there and grab a bunch of medium bottoms because the short, you know, if you get short bottoms, they're short and I'm tall and some small tops. Can you grab a whole bunch? And he went in there without saying a word, said, sure, why not? And grabbed everything. And I went into the women's room and I put on those scrubs. And to the absolute, you know, the nurses were stunned. They're like, wow, can you do that? And I said, I don't know, but I'm doing it because I'm not wearing those dresses. It's not happening. Not now. Not ever.
Yeah.
And so I put it on and the wildest thing happened. So the nurses were watching me carefully, like, is she going to get in trouble? You know, is this going to be a bad thing? She's defying the requirements to put on it. But what I did was I just went out. I scrubbed with everyone else. They put on the big cape, as we always do. We went in. We did the operating room work. We came out, took the thing off, and I walked away in my scrubs. Not one person said a thing, at which point in time, the nurses immediately took all the dresses, trashed them, and immediately went to laundry and picked up all the new scrubs. So that's how that happened. I didn't yell and scream.
Yes.
I didn't say, this is so unfair that, you know, we're stuck wearing these ridiculous dress things. Instead, I just did my own gig and I did it quietly. And after that, everyone wore scrubs.
Yes.
Is that defiance?
It is absolutely defiance. So it's similar, closer to one of the concepts I talk about, which I call quiet defiance, which isn't sort of the public declaration of, no, I can't do that. It's simply aligning your actions with your values and going along with that. And what's really nice about the example that you just described, which is amazing, by the way, that you did that, is that it actually affected other people. So it has this, what I call defiance domino effect, in that then the nurses reacted. They saw you doing this, realized it was fine to do, there was no consequences, and decided to follow the path that you had set out for them, which is wonderful.
Well, you know, it also reminded me of another thing, and tell me if this is quiet defiance. When I was a little girl, I went everywhere with my older brothers who were fraternal twins. So they're a couple of years older, but we look like a little triplet set. And they were always there to protect me and blah, blah, and all the rest of it. All right. So they got to go to a boys' club, which had a beautiful pool indoor, beautiful glass windows around it and whatever. But I couldn't go in. I'm a girl. And there were no girls' clubs yet. So what I would do defiantly is I would put on my little bathing suit. I was adorable. Okay, I got to say, there were some great pictures of this. I was just this tiny little thing. But I went with them and I had my bathing suit on and I would just stare through the window, and the coach would always see me and feel bad, I'm sure. And the boys would learn how to do, you know, all their little swim stuff. And then they, you know, come out afterwards and I'd be standing there in my little bathing suit looking moderately pathetic. And I would do this defiantly every single time they had their lesson. And what was really interesting is one day, I mean, like after doing this forever, the coach looked at me from inside and he motioned, come in. So I went in there and, you know, he risked his job and he put me in the pool, and I had been watching for so long, and I'm a natural born athlete, that I was in the water and I was learning this stuff like in no time. So he would always sneak me in. That's was wonderful. He defiant?
He was defiant as well. If he was breaking the rules in order to do what he thought was the right thing to do, right, which is not excluding you, then yes, I would describe that as defiant.
I love it. All right. Now, your book is just, number one, so easy to read. I love the stories. You're a marvelous storyteller. And in this one chapter, you were talking about find your true no. Now, I thought that that was really cool because I want people to understand what this whole issue of defy is in a more positive vein. So what did you mean by find your true no?
So one of the biggest reasons why we often actively resist defiance is that we don't really understand what compliance and defiance and consent actually are. So we don't know what is what I call your true yes, which is consent, and your true no, which is defiance. And really understanding what that means is a large step in realizing when we need to enact our values to align with our true yes and our true no, rather than our kind of just sliding into. So let me describe this a little bit more. So compliance and consent are often conflated, but they're actually fundamentally different. And for compliance, it's something that we normally just slip into. It could be because we're wired to comply from a young age, that it becomes almost our default reaction that somebody asks us to do something and we just go along with it. And it's often a yes that isn't really quite a yes, you know, so those types of yeses. So why do I say that? That's not your true yes. Consent is your true yes. And what's really useful is taking the definition of consent from medicine, informed consent, and applying it to other decisions we make in our lives. And to have informed consent in medicine, so you're probably familiar with this, it requires five elements. The first one is capacity. We need the mental capacity. We always assess patients to make sure that they can actually make a decision, not too sick, not under the influence of alcohol or drugs. So capacity is the first one. The second one is knowledge. So we need to have information about that decision to make an informed decision. But it's not just being given that information. We need to have a true understanding of the information, a real grasp of the facts, the risks, the benefits, the alternatives. And then the fourth element is the freedom to say no. Because if you don't have the freedom to say no, that's compliance, that's not consent. And then finally, if all those four elements are there, the capacity, the knowledge, the understanding, the freedom to say no, then you can give your authorization. If you want to say yes, that's your true yes, your informed consent. If you want to say no, that's your true no. That's your defiance.
I love it. I just think that this whole concept of understanding when you could use it and when you can't, as it were, and sort of redefining the narrative. I've always loved that word defy. That's why the minute I read, you know, your book review and I saw that word, I said, oh, there we go. Someone finally ran with it. Because to me, it's always been, in my own mind, as I applied it, a very positive thing. Can I say positive?
Yes, absolutely. And I think this is the thing that people really struggle with, because we've been so socialized to think of defiance as a negative thing. If we talk about defiant children, it's often not in a positive way. And yet we need to defy, we need to act in alignment with our values when there is pressure to do otherwise, in order to enact like things that we really care about, like fairness, equality, as you found, integrity. Often we give these things away. We give away our agency, even though we like to think of ourselves as a person of good values, a person of character, a person of integrity, that we would not do unjust or unfair things. And yet we fail to put our actions into values a lot of the time. And learning how to defy allows us to close that gap.
I just love this narrative because it's working for me. You know, when we come back, I'm going to ask Dr. Saw to please tell us, what is false defiance? What's that about? The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. All right. False defiance. What is this?
So false defiance, let me describe it. So if you have a teenager, you might know that you will ask them to do something and they do the exact opposite of that. So it could be described as oppositional. Some people might even describe it as defiance. That's not how I describe defiance, the way that aligns with my definition of defiance. So if you think about it, if my son is playing on the Xbox and I sort of said to him, are you going to do your homework? He often says to me, well, you know, I was going to do my homework, but now that you've asked me to, I'm not going to do it. And I have heard this statement so many times over the years.
Countless.
Yeah. So many times. Now that you've asked me to do it, I'm not going to do it. And what does that show me? What that really demonstrates is that if he is doing the exact opposite of what I am asking him to do, then he's listening very intently to what I want. So in some ways, he's very dependent on what I want rather than deciding for himself what he really wants to do. And false defiance is this aspect of defiance where we go along with other people, whether it is in alignment with them, so we join a march because everybody else is going along with it, or we do the exact opposite, which shows that we're actually listening. It's dependent on someone else. It's not dependent on something coming from within. So if we go back to our true yes and our true no, that authorization is a thoroughly considered authorization of our deeply held values. It's an active expression of our values. But false defiance is going along with somebody else in a different way. It could be compliance in a way, even though it looks like defiance to other people.
Is that kind of going along with the crowd, even though,
sometimes, yes,
you know, you're not particularly passionate about whatever, but it looked like something to do? Or
yes, like if you go along, like if everybody else is displaying a particular sign on their lawn and you go along with that, that's false defiance. If you join a march and just because your friends are, that's false defiance. If your teenager does the exact opposite of what you want, that's false defiance. It's quite performative in a way. And we often see it on social media that people are looking for the performative aspect or getting more likes. And that actually feels good rather than constructive, true defiance.
You know, it's so interesting. When I showed you my shirt that said Defy. One of my most favorite places I began to wear it was when I was working out doing, you know, hardcore weightlifting and whatever in the gym, because I am a triathlete. So what would happen is some guy would walk up to me, you know, very well-intentioned, and he'd see me going toward, you know, a leg press with 300 pounds on. He goes, I don't think you can do that. You might hurt yourself. Are you okay? Is everything all right? Yeah, I don't know who the hell this guy is. And I'm like, yeah. And then I go ahead and press the 300. And he's just standing there staring at me. And I thought, okay, this started happening a lot because I've been lifting for years and I'm a very strong athlete. And I think they didn't think that as a woman, and as a woman who's definitely not 20 anymore, that this was funky. So I started wearing that shirt. Like,
oh, wonderful.
I'm going to defy the odds. I'm going to defy you. I'm going to defy the thought. And that's what one of the things I love about getting people into fitness, for instance, because I want you just to go out there and defy. Do your first, you know, 5K. Do your thing. When people are naysayers and they say, no, you can't do that because you're too fill in the blank. You know, you're too old. You know, you got issues. I don't know, whatever. You know, it's interesting. When I hear that, that ramps me up. Now I really want to defy. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does indeed. And these are some of the things that hold us back, like from defying, is like, you know, the social norms are different. Oh, I can't do that. And as you said, so fill in the blank, all these limiting beliefs that we have about what we can achieve and what we can do and whether we're the type of person to speak up or not. And actually, one of the big myths about defiance is that you have to have a particular personality, and you don't. You don't have to actually be loud, bold, violent, aggressive. You don't have to be heroic or superhuman. You can be defiant in your own unique way with far less stress and anxiety and angst than you used to have. And that's what I learned about defiance, is that it's not a personality, it's a practice. It's a skill set that you can choose to use or not. And you don't have to be a particular way or have a particular sort of loud personality or be larger than life. Anyone can defy.
I think that that's such an important point. I think a lot of people have a stereotype of someone with a bullhorn standing on a soapbox somewhere yelling and screaming and doing their thing. They're, you know, kind of loud and boisterous and maybe negative and angry and stirring up the mobs and whatever. When honestly, I think you would agree in your own life, how many of us know people who do that quiet defiance and sort of get their point across one way or the other and really are able to share valuable life lessons without having to grab the bullhorn, which I think is important, which brings me to this really interesting point of your book. And that is the whole part on becoming a moral maverick. What is that?
A moral maverick is someone who is in training for defiance. So someone who is learning how to speak up and defy when it matters the most. We're mastering this aspect of and practicing the skill set of defiance. And that's what we really want. We want to train our children, not just for compliance, but for defiance. We want them to speak up when something's wrong. And they can start with something small, such as children are very aware of what's fair and what's not. If somebody is being excluded from the group, they can say, I don't think that's fair. And so training our children for defiance is extremely important, because that is what holds us, many of us, back as adults, is that we never received that training. We received far too much training in compliance and not anything in defiance. And that's what we actually need. And so we need to train to be moral mavericks, people who can speak up and act when it matters most.
Is it easier for an adult woman or a man to do this? Have you looked at that? We talked a moment ago about boys and girls. What about adults?
Well, if we have been socialized to comply, we find it very difficult to defy when we grow up. And one of the reasons, there's multiple reasons, is that we feel enormous pressure to go along with other people. Now, I've conducted numerous studies and experiments looking at this and looking at whether people take just really obviously bad advice. And unfortunately, what I see is really high levels of compliance. Like, people will take bad advice even when they know it's bad advice for a variety of reasons. But one of them is due to a psychological process I call insinuation anxiety. And that is a distinct type of anxiety that we have when we worry that non-compliance with another person's wishes is going to be interpreted as a signal of distrust. So it insinuates that the person is not who they appear to be or should be. And we don't want to do that. We don't want to imply that any of our, say, even coworkers, bosses, friends, family, we don't want to apply, or even strangers, as I've found in my studies, we don't want to apply that they can't be trusted or that they're incompetent, they're telling us something wrong, or even that they're sexist. That's why we don't speak up. It's really difficult for us to do that. And I see this insinuation anxiety in small stakes situations and large stakes. So it could be small stakes in that we're at the hairdresser and they're cutting our hair and saying, "You're going to love this new style." And they're cutting. And you're thinking, no, stop. But you find it so difficult to tell them you don't like it. And if you're anything like me, you might even pay and tip them and sort of leave and then cry at home. But it can happen in those small stakes situations, but all the larger stakes situations too. So when you're at the doctor's office and they're recommending a treatment or procedure you don't think is right for you, it's very difficult to say no. When your boss is asking you to take a shortcut on something and you don't think it's the right thing to do, or you're asked to cover something up, it's very difficult to sort of tell them that they're lacking integrity. And it could be the reason why 9 out of 10 healthcare workers, most of them nurses, don't speak up when they see their colleague or a physician making an error. And we really do want people speaking up in those situations, but it's so powerful. It's such a powerful psychological process that keeps us silent and compliant because we don't want to insinuate that there's something wrong with the other person.
I think that women are people pleasers more than men.
Yeah. So as far as insinuation anxiety goes, there was one experiment that I conducted, which was on looking at passengers on a ferry going from Long Island to Connecticut. So an advisor, well, it's actually someone who was pretending to be an employee of the ferry, coming up asking them to fill out a short survey. And the survey was just innocuous questions such as, was the ferry running on time? Is it clean? I wasn't interested in those questions. But what I was interested in is what happened after they finished the survey, when the man would ask them, "Okay, thank you for filling out the survey." And he'd offered them $5 for filling it out. And he would say, "I can give you the $5 cash as promised, or I can enter you into this mystery lottery that pays out somewhere between 0 and 10, but the average payment is less than $5. Now, in this situation, just giving them the options, most of the people just took the $5 cash. So it's 92% of people took the $5 cash, showing very clearly this is the preferred option. But when he gave the advice, "Oh, you should take the lottery," that went up to 20%. 20% of the people now took it. And then what was even more fascinating was when he disclosed an ulterior motive and said that he was incentivized to recommend the lottery because he would get more commission. That doubled to 42%.
That's wild.
It's wild. And that result was purely driven by women. And what they said was that it's not that they trusted the advice less. They very clearly trusted the advice less. So they should not have taken it. They even liked the advisor less. So they weren't like trying to help him, but they felt more pressure to go along with the advice. They felt more uncomfortable to reject it because it would insinuate that the advisor was biased in his recommendation, and they did not want to insinuate that. So women felt that insinuation anxiety far more than men in this situation. Men do feel it in other experiments that I've run, other studies, but in this particular one, when it was a male advisor telling you what to do, women were more likely to feel insinuation anxiety.
Help us understand how positive sort of defiance actually works in a relationship between two partners. How does that actually come out? Because I think that perhaps there might be a little bit of pushback on like, well, I don't want to be too defiant with my partner because I want everything to go swimmingly and I don't want any confrontations and issues here. But at the same time, I'm thinking like in my own relationship, whoa, I got a little defiance going on here and there. But again, I tend to lean into the stealthful, quiet defiance kind of situation. But how does it work to the detriment and to the benefit in an actual relationship?
So, I mean, the very study that I described was with a stranger, and we're seeing these results. But in a relationship, the power dynamics can be very different. So, for example, if you're a patient seeing a doctor, even if it's a doctor you've known for a long time, and in fact, perhaps that you have had a longer relationship, maybe there's even more insinuation anxiety. Now, with a partner, it all depends on the level of trust and transparency. So this is one I've thought about a lot, where we see, for example, if your spouse is recommending a particular restaurant because they think it's really good and you think it's really bad, like how easy is it for you to say, no, they're wrong. This is wrong. This restaurant is not good at all. Or do you let it go? And even in situations that people have described to me that they might know that their spouse is cheating, but they can't ask them to wear a condom because that implies that they are. And that is insinuation anxiety. So there's a lot of, it's very complex when it comes to sort of relationships, as in what is acceptable for us to talk about? How offended is the other person going to be if you say that they're wrong or imply that that recommendation can't be trusted? So there needs to be some element of strong trust there to be able to speak up.
Isn't that just the truth? And of course, communication is the glue that holds all relationships together, you know, one way or the other. There is a beautiful chapter as you're kind of winding things up in the book called The Superpower of Responsibility. I loved that. So tell us what that means.
There's a number of reasons why we find it difficult to defy. The enormous pressure to go along with other people, the misunderstanding of compliance and defiance. And then once we decide to defy, we don't know how. And one of those things in that final one is, how do we actually connect with our responsibility? Because sometimes we just give that away, our agency and our responsibility. We just think somebody else should take action, not us. And when we actually connect with our values and our responsibility, that's when we can really defy and defy well in a positive way. So if we think about, for example, for someone like me who found it difficult to defy and really had to learn the skill set of defiance, I have situations and contexts where I find it much easier to defy. And that's, for example, for my son. If I need to defy for my son, I can do so far more easily than I can for myself. So if there's a school policy I think that is detrimental to children, I can speak up now because I think that's really important. And I don't have the same angst that I do if I was speaking up for myself. If a medical procedure is recommended that I don't think is right for my son, I will go and get a second opinion. I will do far more in this situation because I'm taking responsibility. And one of the things that we can all do is think about, what are we responsible for? We're responsible for ourselves, our community, other people. And connecting with that responsibility is why it's such a superpower, because that is the one thing we give away when we decide to be compliant.
Oh, that's so, you also said, you've got a duty to defy.
Yes.
So do we?
Well, if you think, one of the first questions that you should ask in my defiance compass is, who am I? And if you have values of integrity, which most of us do, that we like to think of ourselves as honest people with good character, with high integrity, benevolence, compassion, equality. There are a lot of the values that my executive students write down. The third question that we ask in the defiance compass is, what does a person like me do in a situation like this? What does a person with these values do in a situation like this? So we connect with our aspirational selves, and we do have a duty to be defiant, because if not, it changes who we are. Like, we're not that person with those values if we can't put our values into action.
So what's the role of bravery?
Well, I say that you don't actually have to be brave. And the reason that I say that is sometimes you can be motivated by fear to be defiant. I interviewed a rookie police officer who had trained during the incident of George Floyd, and he very much did not want to be like the rookie police officers in that situation. One was on third day on his job, the other was on the fourth day, and they complied with orders from their training officer to restrain George Floyd. And he didn't ever want to be in that situation. And he told me that he knew going into the police academy, into the police force, he knew there would be situations where he would be asked to do unethical things, and he would have to be prepared for those particular situations. So he practiced for defiance in that situation and connected with his values and his responsibilities so he could defy.
And so that's what you mean by, you know, if someone is brave.
Well, he said, like, there was one situation where he was asked to search a garage, and it was an illegal search because there was no standing for that search. There was no blood on the floor, nobody screaming. And yet they were like searching for stolen bicycles and they wanted to go in. He was with two veteran police officers that day. And they said that they were going to open the garage door and go in. And he was like, we can't do that. He had just gone through the academy and he knew the law. And he said, even though his childhood stutter came back, he stood up to these people. And he said it wasn't because he was brave. He was actually motivated by fear because he had a whole image in his head of what could happen, that they would go in the garage, the homeowner would come out, maybe with a gun, and start shooting, all because of something that they had done. And he imagined the worst case scenario. So he was very much motivated by fear at that point. But what I say about defiance is that you don't have to be motivated by a particular emotion. You don't have to be brave. You just have to connect with your values. You don't have to have a particular type of personality. If you have anticipated and you have learned the skill set and you have particular scripts in your head that you have learned and become more natural to you, then you can use those things.
I think that understanding and defining bravery is extremely important. I mean, if you see someone, you know, who needs help, life and death, and maybe they're in a burning car or something, and you're just running in there, that's very brave. That's extremely brave. And you've connected with something deeply primal that you need to be able to help someone and save their life. And that's extremely important. And the same thing goes when you take on big challenges in life. And you just have to kind of, you know, gulp and then just get in there and do it, whether it's doing a big sports event that you've been training for and boy, this is, phew, here we go, or whatever. But I like how you differentiated that from the whole issue of fear, which I think that, you know, people really needed to hear in a big way. I love yeah. that superpower of responsibility.
Yeah.
That to me is so, you know, you ended everything with those beautiful words that I just love, dare to defy. So as we kind of swing to the end of this fantastic interview with you, I've learned so much. What do you mean by dare to defy? What kind of beautiful messages do you want to leave all of our listeners and viewers out there with the Her podcast when we're talking about being daring to defy?
Yeah, well, so many of us feel suppressed, that we don't have a voice or that it's useless to speak up. And it's more empowering to think that we can just dare, we can just try to defy and see what happens. And yes, I love the fact that you're describing some brave actions of running into a burning building. Like, I think courage is important. Courage you can have even if fear is present. I just want people to really understand you don't need to be a particular type of person. You don't need to have the self-concept of being heroic or brave or superhuman. Defiance isn't only for the brave or the extraordinary. It's available and it's necessary for all of us. And you can just simply start by asking, does this situation go against my values? And what I want to really get at is this value-driven defiance, the superpower of responsibility, not knee-jerk reactions. So let's make defiance a practice and get that action plan long before the moment of crisis, long before the burning building.
I just love it. Okay, everyone out there on the Her Podcast land, defy. I'm sorry, I just love it. Dare to defy. And now you have a better understanding, and you'll have an even better understanding when you go ahead and run on out there and buy this fabulous book by Dr. Sunita Sah, and that's S-A-H is the last name. And the name of the book is Defy, The Power of No in a World That Demands Yes. I don't know, you know, I'm thinking, women especially, as they cross over from right around the age of 50, they really start kind of like, hey, and the largest number of entrepreneurs are women who have crossed over 50. They suddenly just go, you know, my turn. And I'm going to defy you if I have to. I'm going to just do that whole thing because I have an idea. I have a lot of work and effort behind it, and I'm going to make it work. And there you have it. And you find yourself making decisions where before you were gripped by fear.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all of a sudden, I mean, change ups in relationships. You suddenly find yourself living in a new area geographically, new friends, new hobbies, things just, to me, there's like a real interesting watershed moment that takes place right around that age. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I think it's very much that we're no longer living by everybody else's expectations of our lives, but our own. It would be wonderful to take that learning and experience and have it earlier in life too, you know, that we can stop worrying what everybody else thinks and what their expectations are for us and live according to our own values.
I love that. And you know, what's really interesting is that, you know, and I've mentioned this before, there's some nice books out there about regrets of the dying by hospice workers. And one of the very first is, I wish I had lived a life according to my beliefs and what really was important to me instead of always deferring to everyone else. So this is all the more reason why defy is where it's at. Sunita, thank you so much for being on the Herb podcast. This has just been fabulous. Your book, I'm writing my next book right now. I'm definitely going to be citing your book like there's no tomorrow because I don't know. It's like my motto, defy. You suddenly picked it up and then you ran with it. So thank you for doing that. Everyone, we've been talking to Dr. Sunita Sah once again. She is the author of Defy, The Power of No in a World That Demands Yes. Oh, thank you so much, Sunita.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
And I want to thank my sponsor, Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs Rooted in Nature, and the new Her Life Stages products. Scope it out at Solaray, Solaray.com. And if you go to the website, use the promo code HER20 for 20% off. Remember, the Her Life Stages, go, go, go. And hey, take a moment to leave us a review because we love to hear from you and we're on all of these platforms. So hey, reach out. I love to read them. This has been a production of Podcast Health. And remember, your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there and carpe diem. How about that? Seize the day. Make it happen. Defy. Thanks for listening, everyone.